So today it's about exploring and having a conversation around the impact on technology in terms of not only your business, but in terms of society in general. I think today, generally, we all have become so dependent on cell phones, on the way we interact with the internet, and it's really become pervasive. The stuff that we're doing today, we wouldn't have thought about 10, 15, 20 years ago. I'm not going to say much. I've delegated that effectively to some people, as it my job would give me the prerogative to do. So I've got some individuals, and thanks for traveling from the destinations that you have traveled, some quite far. I think this particular session is obviously just for the leadership of organizations and understanding where your businesses are going. The impact of robotics, the impact of mobility, the impact of really the change in business models, and we've seen that. It's a reality. Those who want to hide from the development of technologies will be left behind. If you want to sit on the sidelines and understand that you will be out of the game if you don't participate in that particular landscape. Now, it is generational. Generally, it creeps up on you. And we hope today we can start that conversation with our clients in general in understanding what do you need to do in your own businesses in order to futurize, so to speak, your businesses. Whether that's efficiency, whether that's changing your business model, the reality is, yeah. If you think about the way people interact with just at the consumer level in terms of how they're purchasing through the e-commerce engines, how these items will be delivered. And the reality is here that your pizzas might arrive with a drone. You know it, so I don't have to tell you this. So I think we all understand that, but what we don't understand necessarily is how does it impact in our lives, and how does it impact in our businesses, and hopefully the guest speakers we got today will elucidate us on that. And really it's about the conversation. It's not about telling you how this is going to happen. It's about starting that conversation and exploring. There's no two entities that are identical the same. There's no businesses that you can take a blueprint and transfer from one business to the other. Each business has got its own DNA. Each business needs to be understood in the context of its history, in context of its industry, and what's happening in those particular industries. So our engagement model is about that. It's about having that conversation with yourselves and understanding and helping you through together with our partners through that landscape, a difficult landscape, I might add. Surely, the thought must go through your minds in terms of not being neutralized and having that Kodak moment or having that Uber moment where entities outside of industries, like in Uber's case, has become a dominant factor in the taxi industries, and yet they don't own a single vehicle. Or Airbnb, whose market cap is larger than the Marriott Hotel Group's, and don't own one piece of real estate. And the list goes on. In any event, I've been given 10 minutes and been told strictly to stick to the time limit. We have a session later on, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But I'd like to welcome Linda. Linda Moore is the Barclays Infrastructure, and I hope I get this right, Linda, Executive Lead in Africa. I think, as we all know, Barclays and EPSA is going through a transformational exercise right now, and hopefully she, and I know she'll give us some insight in terms of her thinking as far as this particular domain is concerned. So, to kick off, singularity is the reality. Welcome, Linda.
I've got my mic. Okay, good morning, everyone. I just want to start off by saying that when Rudy asked me to be a guest speaker here today, my immediate response was, no way, not happening. I work in the data center space. I'm used to talking to technology, tin, seeing flashing lights. It's not my comfort zone area to be standing in front of a group of people and having a dialogue. Nonetheless, I considered it for a bit and I thought, considering where we are, we've got a really, really interesting journey ahead of us in terms of our data center transformation. And I think that if I look at the pace of the transformation initiatives that we're busy driving with our various partners, I think that we've got a really, really good news story to share. So I thought, let me not shy away from it this time, but let me come and actually, just have a conversation and work through what we've been experiencing over the last 2.5 years. So I think, as Ahmed mentioned, the world is changing and technology disruption is really, really rife in our lives at the moment. Sorry. So, how do we remain relevant and how do we make sure that things like cloud are not making us extinct? You know, our business are constantly wanting to do more, faster, for less. So considering all of that and looking at our monolithic designs and our really old legacy ways of doing things in terms of the technology that we've delivered, we've had to inject a certain amount of change. That change when it comes to data centers and what runs inside the data centers is significant. So 2.5 years ago, and before I go there, I just want to say that, you know, my portfolio is quite large across Africa. There's lots of stuff happening in South Africa, in our UK data centers. But the story that I want to share with you today is really about the transformation that we've been able to deliver in a relatively short space of time across our Africa continent. So, I mean, you know, we all know Africa, we love our continent, but we understand the challenges that we're faced with when trying to inject change very, very quickly. So I think, you know, two and a half years ago, we took a step back and we said, well, how do we start this transformation journey? How do we remain competitive? And how do we actually start delivering services quicker for our customers? So really what we did is we said, you know, we have to have a look at the facility itself, but we also have to have a look at how do we consolidate as far as possible to reduce costs? How do we virtualize all of the components that we have? How do we overcome some of the network bandwidth type challenges that we have across Africa, reaching our various partners in country? And how do we actually start enabling autonomy? How do we allow our people in each of these countries to actually be self-sufficient? So what we did is we started off in the data center itself and we said, let's go and remediate as much as possible. Let's help to keep our services available. Let's start injecting some resilience and let's start focusing on how do we actually train our people to be able to deliver these services quicker. So we operate and we've operated as a Barclays entity across Africa for 100 years. In some instances, a little bit over 100 years. So there's lots of legacy there. And traditionally, the way that we've worked across Africa is that we've centralized the support. So our teams in Africa were fairly, kind of disparate. That we didn't have relationships with them. We didn't actually involve them in decision-making. We kind of said, this is the design. Let's go and implement it, and you guys will consume it, which clearly is the wrong way to do things. So We've taken a step back and we've started to actually upskill, to train and to develop our guys, you know, our community. Sorry. So I think, you know, where we're at the moment is that across five of our countries, we've actually started to see quite a significant change in what we've got in the data center. So we've taken our physical and our traditional storage, we've consolidated that, we've moved on to some converged technologies. We've started to, you know, have a look at our network and look at compression types of technologies. We've also introduced, you know, further down the chain to our self-service channels, some resilience aspects. So, you know, in Africa, I mean, by and large, a lot of our connections happen via a cable, a copper cable. When those cables get broken or stolen or whatever, you know, our service goes down. So what we've done is we've actually put an additional layer of resilience on top of the cable. So where their cable is faulty or broken or gets stolen in future, our service still remains up. So after 2.5 years, across five of our big Africa countries, we're already starting to see benefits in terms of availability, speed to deliver. And I think, you know, even if we just have a look at our people, so our people are a lot more enabled. We're now part of one working team where we have people from Ghana, from Kenya, actually helping to support incidents or helping to build new services in South Africa or in other countries. So for me, that's a really, really positive outcome. Where do we want to be by the end of this year when our program across Africa comes to an end? Is all of our countries, so we've got 9 countries, we've got 20 data centers across these 9 countries, and we've got many branches and ATM services behind those. By the end of this year, our transformation program will come to an end. Then we can start deploying and start delivering some innovative type of technologies on top of that, where we start introducing automation. We start, you know, seeing that this whole life cycle reduction. You know, typically, before we started our transformation, we were able to deliver any new service through Africa between 6 and 8 months. That's really long. And in today's age, that just takes away business from us. So we really need to be more efficient in the way that we deliver. So we are aiming at reducing that whole time frame from 6 to 8 months down to literally minutes. And I think that that's a real positive journey. In South Africa, we're doing a lot of transformation as well. We're upgrading our facilities. We're also doing a lot of consolidation. We're also looking at, you know, converged technologies to reduce our footprint. And ultimately, over the next 2 years, we're looking at how do we transform our data center into this bricks and mortar type of service to rather a service that is equitable to other, you know, kind of cloud-type service provider offerings. So we see ourselves potentially having 2 or 3 services that we'll offer from a data center point of view. I think traditionally, the way we've always offered services to our customers is that we've always guaranteed the uptime of our hardware. So we're always building layers and layers and layers of resilience, which is very costly and which takes a long time to deliver. So we need to have a look at other more simplistic types of offerings where we don't guarantee hardware, but we actually guarantee uptime from an application point of view. So lots of transformation happening. I think the journey is a positive one. But it's a lot of work. It's time consuming, and it does involve many partners. So I must admit, working with Datacentrix through Africa has been a real positive journey for us. I think that they've enabled us in terms of reach and helped us to actually fast track things. They haven't been our only partner, though. This type of journey involves many, many people from all of our different areas. So all of our vendors are involved, all of our partners are involved, you know, and really all the way up the chain across IT, you know, it involves a change. So that's it from me. I guess looking back, it wasn't that bad, and I'm glad I took the opportunity. So thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Linda. I think what becomes quite clear in the there's always a short-term, medium-term, long-term type of strategy. And as the saying goes, you have to, how do you eat an elephant? And it's one bite at a time. And I think that's the message we see from the Barclays experience, the agility that needs to be built into infrastructure. And in not just the agility, but the foresight in terms of building an infrastructure that is, again, to use the term futurized, that will move with the business into the future, but also build redundancy. These factors in combination give you an effect of being competitive in the market, making sure that when your cheese is moved, that you can move with that cheese because the infrastructure has been built in such a way that it can deliver to the demands of the business. And it's quite clear for me that IT is an enabler. Technology is an enabler. The question for us as a business and even as a technology company is how do we apply the technology in enabling your business and your business strategies? How do we keep it competitive? How do you keep it relevant? How do you ensure that your business survives well into the future? With that, I'd like to welcome HP Chief Technologist. So these are the guys who think about the future, eat, sleep, drink. David Chalmers has been with HP, or has been in the industry for about, 36 odd years. He's responsible for the best organization in HP, and really talks about the future of IT and where technology goes. So almost looking ahead 5, 10, 15 years' time. Welcome, David, and thanks for your time.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much, Ahmed, and I appreciate the kind introduction. And thank you, Linda, for a great start to the morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to take the next few minutes or so to talk a little bit about the perspectives that I have on where the industry is going. As Ahmed said, I have the privilege of being the chief technologist for Hewlett Packard Enterprise based in Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And as he unkindly reminded me, I'm really old, and I've been doing this for nearly 40 years. But that gives me, I think, the role that I have in the company. One of the parts that I do is I am paid to actually look at the future. I'm paid to work with our customers and partners to look at where we're going, to look at where the technology is and what we could be doing today, tomorrow, and into the future. That combination of that and my excessive age gives me a perspective that I'd quite like to just spend the next few minutes sharing with you. Because you have the privilege, challenge, depending on how you look at it, of being leaders in this industry or leaders in your industries at the time when information technology is going to go through the biggest period of change that's seen in two decades. You will see more change in the next 3 to 4 years than you've seen in the last 20 to 25. I'm not presenting that as a good thing or a bad thing, it's just a thing. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. There is no King Canute moment here where you can actually try and slow the thing down. It's going to happen. And you're going to see more and more impact of this change. It's not something that you can avoid. It's not something that you can sit back and wait for. It is going to happen to your industry. And I see the change really coming in two big ways. One is the scale of the change that we'll be dealing with, you'll be dealing with. When you look at the digital world that we're now all living in, and I would argue very strongly it has already changed, it's probably the only thing I would disagree from Ahmed's description earlier, the world is not about to change, the world has already changed. You are living in a digital world today, whether you're comfortable with it or not, but you are looking to lead organizations at a time when it is very different from what it was only a very short time ago. So you'll see the change in two ways. You'll certainly see it in terms of scale. The amount of digital information that you as individuals and your organizations will be trying to deal with will be exponentially bigger than it was before. Now, that's a really easy, glib thing to say, but it is undoubtedly true that you will have more digital stuff. If you just think about yourselves as individuals, when was the last time you bought a mobile phone that had less storage than the last one? You can't. You always buy a phone that's got more storage because you've got more stuff on it. Be that email, be that photographs, be that videos of your children, grandchildren, you're collecting more stuff. Your organizations are exactly the same. They're collecting and generating more digital information than they know what to do with, and your challenge is going to be how do you find value in that to actually get the benefit for your organization. So scale is going to be very different. I talk normally at this point about asking how many people in the audience have control over the budget to buy storage, partly to keep my sales team happy, because whoever has control over the storage for budget, I can promise you only one thing, it's not big enough. However big your budget is, it's not big enough, because you will want to store far more digital tech stuff than you've ever done before. So scale will be a problem. The other challenge you're going to see is speed, and I'll talk in the keynote later on this morning about how today is probably the slowest day you will ever have again, because tomorrow will be faster. And the day after that will be faster than that, and so on and so on. So if you think this is going to be a challenging day, tomorrow's going to be worse. It's going to be harder to actually keep up as things keep moving faster and faster and faster. And we can see examples of that in many different industries about the speed of change. We can look at how many of the leading stock market companies, or the average lifespan of a leading stock market company, is a third today what it was 20 years ago. Companies don't live as long because they can't keep up. They don't change fast enough to be able to adapt and move forward. So the world is changing, and I'll give a whole series of silly examples later on this morning, but the point there is it will change bigger, pardon me, and it will change faster than you've ever seen it before. Now, you will have things to help in that space. There will be a whole raft of new technologies and new approaches. And I'd love to spend 2 hours up here telling you how wonderful our products are, but I'll spare you that. They are fabulous, you should really look at them, but that's not the point. The point is you will have access to a whole range of new technologies that will help you move in that space. And you'll see those deployed in two major areas, in our opinion. You'll see them deployed in the data center, the cloud model. Almost every one of your organizations will have some cloud adoption model right now, and that's a good thing. But the thing that's changing is the world will be hybrid. There is no one single answer that will fit your organization and everybody else's at the same time. And that gets a little uncomfortable. I see many organizations who are saying, yeah, well, I'm a bank, or I'm a retailer, or I'm an educational institution, or I'm a government, and I feel comfortable if my IT answer kind of looks like my competitors, because that tells me I'm sort of in the ballpark, I'm doing the right things. In the hybrid world, that will no longer be true. In the hybrid world, your answer will be significantly different from somebody who's trying to do almost exactly the same as you. That doesn't necessarily feel very comfortable. It gives you a competitive edge if you do it well. It puts you at a competitive disadvantage if you don't. So the world will be hybrid. You will have technologies and workloads that will live on your existing data centers that you own. I see many organizations that go through the data sovereignty debate that says, this is the thing that makes me me. This is the data that defines my organization, that makes me unique in the marketplace. Nobody is going to touch this unless they're wearing one of my badges. It's too important to me. So I'm keeping that on premise. I'm keeping that being looked after. I see other organizations that say, yeah, but I can put the rest of it in a public cloud environment or a private cloud environment or a managed services environment, and that combination for your organization will be different from nearly everybody else in the marketplace, and that's a good thing. We'll also see an even bigger explosion in terms of technology, what we describe as the intelligent edge, IoT, if you want to use the fashionable phrases that are out there. But the explosion in digital creation and digital interfaces that exist at the edge will revolutionize every single one of your industries. We tend to look at it through the lens of consumers. We tend to look at it from the personal device side because it's the easiest thing to see. But you will have, I don't care what your industry is, I don't care what business you're focused on, but you will be impacted this year, next year, and into the future by the digitization of the interface at the edge, be that through a mobile device, be that through a car, be that through an advertising mechanism. You will be impacted through the digitization of the edge. And that's why we've invested so heavily in technologies in that space, both wireless with Aruba, which is a hugely successful part of our organization today, as well as compute and storage and analytics at the edge to help you find value in all of that new interfaces that you're going to have. In some ways, that's the easy part, though. The much more challenging part starts to become when you move into the softer parts of the organization. And I would contend to you that the biggest battleground you're going to face, actually there are two. The first one is talent. Being able to find and retain and look after the talent that will drive your organization forward will be the number one challenge that you'll face. Working with the right technology partner, yes. Working with the right technologies, absolutely. Thinking about how you're going to go in the future, definitely. But have you got the right talent? Are you recruiting the right people who will help you move your organization forward? Are you training and enabling your people to be able to take advantage of this? Because I see that as one of the major challenges we face in our industry. I've addressed that personally through my organization by going back into the universities and the schools. So I give away some of my IP to universities to change their curriculums so they teach the students better so I can hire better people. That's a long-term play for me. It's not going to happen overnight, but I'm already investing in that space. I pay my best strategists and leaders in my organization to go do guest lecturing in universities so I can hire better people. Because that generation aren't like me. I'm old, right, as Ahmed reminded me this morning. I've been doing this a long time. I look at the digital generation, and the digital generation today is probably anybody who's under 31 years old. My personal definition, can they remember the world without the internet or a mobile phone? Because if you can, you're old. Right? If you can't remember it, if you can't actually remember what the world looked like without the internet or the mobile phone, then you're a digital native. I'm not. I'm way past that. I had to learn this stuff. But that generation don't think like me. They think very differently. They interact very differently. We did a survey nearly 2.5, 3 years ago now, which was quite interesting, looking at the usage of mobile phone devices in a young generation. At that time, it was from 18 to 24-year-olds in the workplace, so not students, but in the workplace, 18 to 24-year-olds, Western Europe, North America. And we did a survey of the usage of their mobile device. And we tried to find out, you know, what do you actually do with this thing? Because I know what it is, it's a phone. I phone people, right? That's what I do with it. Email if I'm desperate, but that's what I do with it. The younger generation don't do that. We did a survey, we actually asked them, you know, how many SMS messages do you send? The average in that generation is 2,800 SMS messages in 30 days. Okay, that's the normal, actually, that's the average, by the way, the peak is way up there. That's about 100 messages per day per person. Okay, that seems like a lot to me. I don't send anything like that. And this is before the WhatsApp, Twitter bubble came and went. You also asked them, how long do you speak talking on the phone? Because it's a phone, right? That's what you do with phones, right? Nah. Less than 8 minutes in a month is what they actually spend. And this is everything from, you know, 21-year-old Italian ladies who spend a lot of time talking, all the way through to monosyllabic Scottish males who don't. Less than 8 minutes. And if you analyze what they did with that 8 minutes, nearly all of it was accessing voicemail. Accessing voicemail to pick up messages from old people, right? Saying, because if you phone an under 30-year-old and you get their voicemail, what does it actually say? It says, typically, I'm sorry, I can't take your call right now. If it's urgent, send me an SMS. Okay, so you send them an SMS and get an instant reply. The phone's in their hand, but they don't answer it, because that's not what they do. Right? They treat it as an asynchronous interactive device. It's not the same way. They don't think the same way as I do. There's huge challenges in that. There's also huge opportunities. One of the challenges is security. We spend an awful lot of time trying to secure the intelligent edge. It's one of the most important things you will ever have to do. And if you want one thing to focus on from this talk this morning, look at security at the edge in your digital native generation, because they don't care. Right? You have to automate it. You have to do it for them, because they fundamentally don't care. That's the challenge. The good news is they will tell you anything. They will give you all of their personal information and tell them all about themselves in return for almost nothing. Right? So your opportunity to learn about your target audiences is going to be immense. So the talent pool that's out there is very different. They do also regard the device, though, as very differently. One of the really fun parts of my job is when I go through this university thing, I always make time to be there on the first day when all the new university graduates start. So in the UK, that's usually September-ish. Some of the other countries, the date moves. But the first day, they all show up. And it used to be really fun. It was a bit like Christmas, because they would all show up, and we'd welcome them, and they'd get all their things. They'd get their nice badge to get in the door. And we'd hand them a new, at that time, HP laptop, and we'd give them a mobile phone. And they were, ooh, toys, lovely. About 4 years ago, it completely changed. They came in, we handed them a laptop, we offered them a mobile phone. They all went, do I have to, really? Do I have to use this thing? I've already got a laptop that's smaller and cooler than this, and as for that piece of nonsense you're giving me as a phone, I'm never going to use that. And I'm never going to give you my mobile number, because that's me. Right? Is it actually genuinely the only truly globally unique piece of information about any of us, apart from our DNA, is our mobile phone number. It's a unique identifier, and the digital generation will never give it up. So how many 25-year-olds do you have in your workplace that carry two telephones or three telephones? Right? More and more. Not because, as we see in some countries, because the tariffing makes that a sensible thing to do, but because that makes them unique. It's theirs. It's a completely different attitude from old people like me who have to learn into this space. So talent will be one of your major battlegrounds. The technology will help, but you have to look at the talent. And the last point I'd like to spend a few minutes on is when you build that up to you. Because leadership in this world is not the same as it used to be. I would ask all of you to think about the leadership team in your organization and ask yourself some interesting questions. How many of them are genuinely digital literate? How many of your leadership team know how a 25-year-old, which is going to be increasingly your target market regardless of your industry, how many of them are actually understanding what they do? Now, I cheat because I have children and grandchildren, so I watch how they behave and that's how I learn. But how many of your leadership are genuinely digitally literate in the world? Because if they're not, you have a problem. Because they will not think fast enough. They will not think clearly enough about the changes they need to make if we're going to go forward. And the test case I nearly give most of the organizations I go and engage with, I ask, do you have a digital transformation plan? Right? And the majority of companies I talk to get all excited at this point and go, absolutely, we've got one. Of course, we've got a digital transformation plan. It's really important to our business. That's the wrong answer. What you need is a transformation plan for your digital business, not a digital thing that's bolted on the side. You've got to regard and look at this as the digital is the business, regardless of your industry, whether you've been already transformed because you're in newspapers or print, whether you're about to be transformed because you're in education or healthcare, or you will be in the next year or so as the IoT bites in manufacturing, some of the other industries. If you don't think about this as a digital industry, if you don't think about this as digital being the core of what you do, not something you bolt on around the side, you will be too slow. You won't be able to take advantage of it. And that's what we, with Datatronics, what we as Hewlett Packard Enterprise look to help our customers do, is think faster. It's to help them actually move more quickly in this world so you can take advantage of the new tools that are out there. There are many. The whole digital world will give you many more options to choose from. That's both really good and really challenging, because you have more choices to make, more decisions to make, and less time to make them in. That's the opportunity, that's the challenge that we face. This is a really exciting time. I'm having more fun as an individual, and our organization is growing and developing faster than we have for a very long time because our world has already changed. This is a really exciting time to be part of it, and I really look forward to working with you through that. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, you're scaring me, David.